Chunks Podcast. My name is Josh.
And I'm Jeff.
And this is the podcast where we talk about things like how to alienate a couple thousand people with one phrase. Jeff, what is that phrase?
If you don't vaccinate, you're a bad parent.
Ooh, that's going to... People are going to be throwing
is
hands.
Is it going to sting?
It's going to sting a little
sting
bit
more than
people.
A little needle?
And why can't we all just get along? There's another one that we talk about. And here's a question. I mean, because we're going to be talking about vaccinations today and more about the zombie apocalypse, and we've got a really cool guest on. But here's a question. Would you rather kill someone and live with it for the rest of your life, but no one knows you did it, or not kill someone, but everyone thinks you did kill them?
Wow.
Yeah. And in this age of like these documentaries about these people being falsely imprisoned, like Making a Murderer.
Yeah.
You know? What would man. Because you're going to have to spend, if they all think you did it, basically you probably go to jail, right?
Well, I'm going to kill somebody.
I guess,
straight
yeah,
up.
I wouldn't want to be in jail for the rest of my life.
Well, and because you didn't specify who died, I'm going to think it's not an innocent. I killed somebody who deserved it.
Going Dexter on someone.
Yep.
Yeah,
and
vigilante.
And then I don't have to deal with it. I like that better. Because that would suck. There's nothing worse than being accused of something.
Yep.
And as soon as that happens and everybody starts to believe it, it doesn't matter what you say.
Yep.
Everything you say will be twisted to be, oh yeah, you said it because of this.
Well, look what's happening
horrible.
In the Me Too movement in the U.S. And this is one of those things where it doesn't, like, it's happening now with the Democratic governor in Virginia. People are coming forward and he's not stepping down and the Democrats are silent about it. But Kavanaugh, no proof, no corroborating evidence. And they're like, burn him at the stake. It doesn't matter if we have no evidence. But with this other Democrat, it's like, here's the thing. Innocent or not, right? You're right. It's the worst thing that could ever happen to you. And our kids are, remember when they were talking about, like, I hate when I'm told I did something and they don't believe me I didn't do it.
Right.
That's
yeah.
one of the things
it's
I
horrible.
Hate the most. But you're right. I think I am in the same boat. I'd rather just kill someone and just like live with it than have to spend the rest of my life in prison for something I did not do.
Yeah. That would,
be super depressing. I think a lot of people, how many people do you think are in jail that didn't do it?
It's kind of twisted though that we're both thinking that way, but.
Just saying. It'll never happen because it's
Yeah.
But, all right, so let's get to the dad joke of the week because let's lighten it up a bit.
Do we have one?
I do.
Give it to me.
So I made a belt out of watches yesterday. It was a waste of time.
waste
get
of
it?
Time.
All my waste with the watches.
Yeah, yeah. Time all over your waist.
Expensive to build a belt out of watches. But
I get jokes.
All right, day of the year, February 18th. What is it?
All right, February 18th. Here we go. National Battery Day.
Okay, like. Just batteries?
Or maybe you lick a 9-volt.
I play acoustic guitar, and every time I check to see, I have to do that. And I hate it, but it works.
You know what would be a funny thing to do? Put a little peanut butter on the end of a 9-volt and get the dog to lick it.
PETA, we're sorry that Jeff said that. Don't come after us. I had a kid.
It'd be funny.
I grew up with a kid in my hometown. You know those crazy kids that just like, he's probably in jail now, but he licked a 9-volt battery until his taste buds exploded. And he said he can't taste any. He could, at that point, it was probably grade 7 or 8, he said he couldn't taste anything because he destroyed his taste buds by licking a 9-volt battery and just keeping his tongue
like,
on it.
Destroyed them forever?
That's what he said. He said the doctor said he can't taste anything for the rest of his life because he did that.
That's dumb.
An idiot, right?
He could probably make money, though, eating really gross stuff now, though.
It's his YouTube channel.
Yeah.
What
else
we got?
Here's another one. The next one, National Drink Wine Day.
For those alcoholics in our audience,
I actually have a neighbor who celebrates that day every day. What is this one? Listen to this one.
Okay.
National Crab Stuffed Flounder Day. That is super specific.
There's a lobbyist for crab who is going around making, you know, there's a lobbyist who got
that's
that.
That's amazing,
why?
Though. Crab Stuffed Flounder. Yes,
so
unreal.
Stupid.
And then President's Day. Third
like
Monday in February.
For U.S.
Yeah, for the U.S.
And in Canada, we celebrate National Family Day, which is just literally a day off.
Because we didn't want the Americans being the only ones that had one.
Exactly.
Yeah.
All right. Let's talk about hot topics. What's trending? Right now, I mean, we usually record the podcast a week ahead. Everybody knows that. At this point, we're talking about the Green New Deal in the U.S. You hear about this thing?
The Green who?
It's called the Green New Deal, which I hate the fact they call it the Green New, because I don't understand why they call it the Green New Deal. Why can't they call it the New Green Deal? And everybody's making fun of her, because there's literally a line in there that says, we will provide money for people unwilling to work. So Democrats are like, you know what? You don't want to do something? No problem. Do you. We'll give you some cash.
I think the Green New Deal is happening at my house right now with all three of my kids.
We've had the Green New Deal forever. But you're right. And
I didn't sign it, though.
Well, this is the thing. She's so... they're releasing all these things to say, this is what we want to do. Basically, the Green New Deal is to eliminate, you're saying, we're going to, in 10 years, there's going to be no more oil, gas, or the plants, nuclear.
Oh, nuclear plants,
gone.
Yeah.
Gone.
So she wants to do all renewable, like all solar, all wind, all whatever.
And so she puts this thing out there, and people are like just laughing at her. Like she's like, we're going to eliminate the need for airplanes. We're going to do all trains. I think maybe just in the U.S. instead of taking an airplane over to because she wants to be, how do you go on a train without fossil fuel or an airplane? I think the train is more feasible because you can do electromagnetic, electrical, whatever, right? Yeah. An airplane, you can't fly without fuel. So she's saying, in order to get rid of fossil fuel, our reliance on fossil fuel, we can't have airplanes. She's literally saying, we don't want any more fossil fuel ever.
Okay, so it's a good goal to go towards, but what the heck does that have to do? No, I just mean...
But impossible.
Yes, but I understand the direction. Yeah. It's a good direction to want to go into better.
Yeah.
But what the heck does that have to do with paying people who decide not to work?
It's just Why is that another thing in there? Well, she's saying she's talking about bringing economic prosperity to the U.S. and how she's going to do it is through like renewable energies and all these going to bring jobs, and we're going to basically what socialists and Democratic socialists believe is that there should be a livable wage for anybody who wants it. Doesn't matter what you do. Right? They basically want billionaires to be taxed at $10 million and then everything else gets sent to the government, right? They want you to... Basically, socialism says, we're going to make sure everybody lives on the same... It's communism, basically. Everybody, it's in a perfect world, it works, right? But it can't because there's inherently evil... It's corruption.
Yeah.
It can't... It can never work because politicians are inherently corrupt.
Yeah.
80% of them.
They're telling you to do this, but they'll still be...
Yeah. In a perfect world, it does work, but it doesn't because... They're saying they're taxing. There's no reason a person should have $1 billion because there's no way, nothing they can do with all the money. And they're right.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's not, it's a free country. This is, you're allowed to, you're allowed to be able to have that. That's another topic. But anyway, she's talking about, she wants to get rid of cows that fart. There's too many cows that fart because that's going to
end. I actually agree with that.
And anyway, that's the hot topic right now. And people are just hating on her. And then she released a different one and said, oh, no, that was an initial one. And she's going back. AOC is like the hot topic in American politics right now. And she's loving it. She's like the anti-Trump, but like hated as much as the left hates Trump. The right hates her because she's like, she's going hard and young people are following her.
And this is the problem why nothing ever gets solved. Because you got the two... far wings that hate each other and everybody wants to hate and nobody listens to anybody in the middle who has any element of sanity and just says, hey, look, I lean a little bit this way, not all the way.
And
you're just lumped
people,
in with those crazy people on both sides.
And those are the people that vote presidents in and prime ministers. Those are the people that, no, the middle, the silent majority middle are the ones who vote. And so news only covers the fringes and the other people are just left to be like, okay, you guys are all dumb. I'm going to vote when I need to. So.
And the best part is if they voted somebody in who was in the middle, one of the idiots on the wings would probably assassinate them right away.
I was just watching a documentary yesterday, Mr. Rogers.
Yeah.
Really good documentary.
We're into what we're watching?
Oh, let's go into what we're watching. Yeah, so let's do that.
Let's hit it.
There's two things we're watching. I'm watching Patriot. I want to talk about that first, which is on Prime.
Yeah, you keep talking about this. I still haven't seen it.
Weird. The way that they space out the dialogue and the characters is just like, you have to like this type of filmmaking. It's cinematically beautiful. It's really weird, but like, you can't stop. It's really weird. You have to watch it. I can't explain it any more than that. It's just, well, I can explain what it's about. It's a guy. He's like an undercover agent. His dad's like some kind of upper level CIA guy or whatever. And his job is to just go to another country and drop some money off. And he does this, right? This is his job. And
he's just really quiet.
Yeah. But he's like, he's an operative, right? And it's just weird. He likes to play acoustic guitar and go to these like, and he's a really good singer. He does like this, but he sings about what he's doing on these missions.
Okay.
But no one in the clubs are listening. He's just playing and they're like, anyway, you gotta watch it. It's really, really cool.
Is there anything to compare it to?
Nothing.
All right.
Nothing.
That's awesome.
Nothing
I like
exists
that.
Like this.
A new adventure.
And they talk really slow and they space out a lot of, it's just really, really well done. I mean, if you love cinema and all that stuff, you're going to like it.
Cool.
You'll really like it.
All right.
And then again, I was watching the Mr. Rogers because Kathy wanted to watch it. And so I was like, let's do this. I didn't watch Mr. Rogers a lot. I did a little bit. I wasn't a huge Mr. Rogers fan. I'm not for any reason except for I just didn't watch it very often.
Yeah.
But I did watch it sometimes.
Sure. And you knew what it was.
Yes. And man, that documentary was good.
So it's a one episode documentary. It's 2 hours or whatever.
Yeah, and the reason I brought that up because of the assassination attempt you said was because he was not afraid to shy away from things like when Kennedy was shot, assassinated. He brought that up on his show and talked to kids about assassination.
Wow.
And like that guy was. You gotta watch the documentary. Have you seen it?
No, I want to see.
Do you know who
Mr.
Rogers is? Obviously.
Absolutely, yeah.
He was a minister. Never practiced though. He was ordained.
Oh, I didn't know that.
No, he went to school for it, dropped out to go to TV, and then just went back at a break. And then he is an ordained minister because he's schooled that way. Sure. But he's not.
Yeah, he's not practicing.
I'm sure he preached once in a while, but he didn't. You know what I love about Mr. Rogers, and as being a Christian myself, who doesn't like to push. Yeah, that too. Doesn't like to push my religion on people, and I won't ever. He never did ever, right. ever. And one of the guys on his show was gay, and in a time in the 60s and 70s, I was like. He was tolerant, like, and didn't say anything.
People. He accepted people.
Accepted
human,
like,
beings.
And he said the 143 was his number. He weighed 143 pounds for, like, most of his life. And 143 was I, L-O-V, four letters, Y-O-U. And he loved 143. I love you was his thing. I love you. And it's like, the impact he made on kids and people in the world was that he just said, love people.
It's cool.
I look back and it was sad. There's some, Kathy was bawling her eyes out. And I'm like, oh, she bawls out her eyes all the time. But
yeah.
That was a good documentary.
That actually leads into what I've been watching.
Okay, what are you watching?
The Ted Bundy tapes.
Very similar. They're both from the U.S.
Okay, so cool haircuts. Polar opposite of what you're talking about, but holy cow. It was weird. It was like a train wreck.
Isn't it amazing how he got caught?
Yeah, it's incredible, like, how he got caught, but it's insane how you get it. You get why he didn't get caught for so long. It's like, you look at that dude, good looking guy. Yeah.
That's
well-spoken.
White privilege right there.
Oh my goodness. It was disturbing. Actually made me super disturbed for my family. Like,
well, in the era of new technology, Ted Bundy would have been caught right away.
Yeah.
Because DNA, because of certain things, because of even just the internet, because those departments between them didn't talk to each other. He just moved to another state and started killing people.
Yeah, but he got rid of those first bodies without anybody knowing, like, for the longest time. Those
having no evidence was huge. Even to the end, there was no evidence
was nothing,
of any of
it.
But he was, man, and he gets celebrated. It's weird online. There's a podcast I listen to called Sword and Scale.
Yes.
And there's
listened.
Some weird, a lot of women who love serial killers, which is so weird to me.
I don't get
it. And they celebrate them and they wear t-shirts and they do drawings. I'm like, I get that this is an interesting person and up to the point where he has done something that no human hardly ever does. It's such a weird thing. And I get why you are interested in that. But don't celebrate these people.
Yeah. Why would you celebrate it? What's the purpose?
Exactly. There's no, and they're just a weird subsect of people that are like, you know, they would write them letters or want to date these guys. Like, it's just so weird.
Celebrate the destruction of somebody's family.
Because they don't ever talk about the women that they killed. No one can name one victim of him. Unless you're really into it. I can't name one. Everybody knows Ted Bundy's name, but I can't name a victim.
Right. Well, people can, for sure.
Yeah, people
that were affected.
Yeah. But, I mean, the real world, when you're and Netflix makes millions of dollars off these
documentaries. I know. There was something that actually disturbed me while watching it because of the glorification of it. But at the same time, it's intriguing to hear something about history where
because
somebody
it's outside
was,
the realm of norm
I guess,
as a human. So you're like, well, how can someone do this in your interest? I love Sword and Scale, and all he talks about is murder.
Right.
It can get really intense sometimes.
Yeah.
And I don't celebrate these people. I wouldn't write them a letter and be like, hey, how's it going, man? You know, I wouldn't put up signs. Like, it's just, some of these people are like crazy. Let's go story time with Uncle Jeff. You got anything cool?
Hang on. All right. This one makes me laugh every single time that I tell it. And whenever I drive past where it happened,
you chuckle.
I laugh. And I usually tell the story again. And everybody laughs every single time.
All right.
Okay. So we went to a pedestrian struck.
Yep.
Quite a common occurrence, as I don't know if you'd expect that, but it happens more often than you would think. I've been to some funny ones because they're not that bad. It's usually somebody turning a corner and stupid doesn't look and bumps somebody. And I mean, it's not good. But I've been to other ones that are probably one of the worst calls I've ever been to was also the same sort of thing. This one was an elderly lady walking across a driveway to a store. And for some reason, somebody hit her. And I mean, she's elderly. It's not a good thing that she got hit.
Yep.
She was okay, though. I mean, I'm sure she was sore and would have been for a little while and it shouldn't happen. But while we're trying to treat this lady, another lady comes running up, huffing and puffing, a younger lady at this point, who arrives. And when she got there, this is what she said. Where is the person that hit her?
Said it like that.
So dramatic. And we're dealing with the lady and we look up. We're like, what the heck is going on? And she repeated it. Where is the person that hit her? I'm probably peeking there. It's probably too much. Where is the person that hit her? She gets so excited. It was crazy. And then there was a cop there who was pretty comical in my opinion. He goes up there, he goes, why? He goes, what if I show you who hit her? He goes, what are you going to do? But anyways, this, it was the granddaughter, I think, of this lady. But anyways, just the way she came in.
Said it.
Not coming in to check on granny and see how granny's doing, but coming in looking for vengeance. Basically, like, you know, just
foaming at the mouth,
ready to go. But just the drama with which, where is the person that hit her? So we like chuckle about it every time.
That's awesome. Was the old lady okay?
Yeah, well, I'm sure she was, like, eventually. I mean, she would have gone to the hospital, got an x-ray. And she'd been, like, she wasn't, it was not, like, she wasn't bleeding from the head. Oh, okay. Or, I mean, maybe she had a cracked hip, which sucks. Yeah. But, I mean, but it was just...
I got hit by a car when I was young. It was not good.
No.
Terrible.
There's no way it's good.
I had to go to the hospital. It was great. Anyway, let's go to parenting marriage tip of the week. And because today we're, the last two episodes, I know I've been talking about anti-vaxxers a lot, and like we make fun of them. And, you know, I do think, I have my strong views on this topic.
Yeah, vaccinate your kid.
But, exactly. I was thinking about this. And when we're interviewing Jason, when he comes up, he's going to talk about this too. And he says this a lot. It's just like, look, I get why you don't want to vaccinate your kid. I'm not, I don't think that you're selfish. To some degree, I don't think that people are doing it because they're selfish. They're like,
I think
screw
it
you.
Is selfish.
Some of them are like, I don't trust big pharma. And if that's your argument, I already told you, then you're not allowed to go to the hospital. You're not allowed to take an aspirin. You're not allowed to use a Band-Aid. You can't do any of that stuff.
Right.
If you don't trust big pharma, then don't trust big pharma for everything. But some of them are actually scared that their kid's going to have some kind of adverse reaction or death to this. So my marriage, you know, parenting or marriage tip of the week, is a parenting tip, is that when someone disagrees with you on something fundamental like this, like, I absolutely think that vaccinations help, and they do, and science proves it, blah, blah, blah. But for those who don't and have no reason or no logical reason, it's generally me saying, making fun of them or belittling them or swearing at them or doing something. And I don't think that's effective. And being a pastor too, it's not effective, because you're not going to tell someone to do what you want. And the way to get someone to shift your opinion or to your side is not by making fun of them or belittling. So a parent who disagrees fundamentally on something like, say, spanking or this or this or this, a lot of us parents judge each other based on what decision we make in a certain thing. Let's stop that. How about as parents, we just say, hey, look, I totally get your opinion. Here's what I believe. And then just like move on, because this one you could talk about forever. And especially things that really I'm heated about. So for me, next time a parent comes up and they disagree with me or have something to say, I'm like, hey, that's great. You know, I'm glad that you have a different opinion. I'd love to hear what you have to say. And then just take it with a grain of salt and move on, which a lot of us do not do. Or if you're the other person who always constantly tells parents what they should be doing, like I remember when my wife was pregnant and she took a picture of the diapers in our closet, said, we're all ready. And there was like, wife was like a zombie prepper for baby, right? There was like 40 box of diapers in there. And no joke, 15 parents were like, why'd you get so many diapers? Blah, blah, blah. And they all had something to say instead of congratulations. They're just like, they just berated her about having so many diapers, and she cried because of it. I'm like, this is keep, why would you say something like that? Like, when someone asks for advice on parenting, just give, you know, say what you got to say. But a lot of people are like, they're not even asked advice and they give you advice. So
right.
Maybe the idea here is don't give advice and just like keep to yourself unless you're asked. So if someone asks me, hey, do you vaccinate your kids and why? I'm going to say, yeah, of course, because I believe that it helps prevent diseases and, you know, all this stuff. If someone says, hey, but I'm rarely asking someone if they're an anti-vaxxer, because the person on the other side of the illogical argument tend to be illogical, and they get super offended by everything. So it's a different person, right?
Sure.
So a lot of times I'm just leaving it out. But it's my podcast. I talk about what I want.
Real life for me, I learned that quick too. When I decided to stop eating meat, you take flack. And
yep.
And Trish told me at the beginning, I talked way too much about it. Now that was because it was something I was passionate about.
Yep.
And it's not that I wanted to change anybody's mind. That really was not my motivation, but it was more just sort of talking about what I learned. And I learned pretty quick. Same sort of thing. If nobody's asking you, then you should probably just keep your mouth shut. And I learned that quick.
I think like anything, lifestyle choices or things we're really interested in, the reason we talk about them is because we are, and it just helps us get better at those things.
Yeah, but
I get
still,
it.
But still,
I know you. I don't think that you're a vegan preacher. I know people who are like, who will go to like butcher shops and like, you know, break windows and do crazy things. Like, I get what you're saying. And I had a meatless burger the other day. We'll talk about that another time.
Yeah,
But like, I don't like, nobody likes preachy people.
No. Yeah,
which
you don't,
is what I exactly. fell victim to in the Babylon Bee article the other day about the anti-vaxxers, and I argue with people for hours. People that I'll never switch to my side, or I'll never switch to their side. Just what a waste of time.
Yeah.
What a waste of time. So let's not waste our time.
Let's not waste it anymore.
I know you got to go soon, but let's talk about airing grievances. Just recently, girl threw a chair off a balcony in Toronto. 43 stories.
Yeah.
It was an Airbnb. She didn't live there. That's what I found out. Oh. And didn't kill anybody, didn't hurt anybody, whatever, but the cops were looking for her. She filmed it. What an idiot. And now she's turned herself in and blah, blah, blah. It brings me to this whole thing that you said, what was it, the cops aren't going to do much about it because she didn't hurt anybody.
I don't know if they won't do much about it, but they were just saying that, yeah, they're going to wait for her to turn herself in. They're not going to put out a manhunt because nobody was hurt. And that just kind of bothers me because there was such a lack of thought put into that stupid stunt to do what? Make a 7-second video. What do you call those videos?
I don't know.
TikToks?
Instagram, TikToks, something, yeah, something like that. Probably.
Anyways, whatever it is. I mean, this video, I guess, that you want to go viral. Well, yeah. Didn't go viral for her in a good way. But I just hope, like, there needs to be a punishment for that. I mean, people do stupid things to video all the time. And I mean, most of the time they're hurting themselves. So, I mean, I don't care.
Well, my
so
grievance
much
about with
that.
It is that our Canadian law or whatever our punishment system is ridiculous. It's ridiculously lenient for a lot of people, except for other things. Like, for example, if you want to, like, Jordan Peterson's a perfect example, and he didn't go to jail or anything, but they're making it illegal to call a transgender person if you consider this person a male, whatever your beliefs are, and you call them a male, but they don't like that. That's against the law, and they'll come after you hard on that. But if you murder somebody, 25 years is your max. That's all you get in Canada. Look at what's her face? We've talked about this before. The girl killed the kid with a hammer. She got sent to a healing lodge. Like, I don't understand. I get why liberals, you know, are generally the people that err on the side of everybody's human, so let's do that. And I sort of get that. But at the same time, if you're a criminal who has murdered somebody, I think human nature says to the end, it's like, no, you need to be punished. Canadian law, my grievance is that we're so lenient. So what? It doesn't really stop people from really having, like, this kid who killed 6 people at a mosque in Montreal or in Quebec somewhere, 40 years max. And his parents came out and said that's too harsh. So even the parents understand our system and saying, hey, look, that's the harshest thing anybody's ever gotten in Canada. 40 years for killing 6 people. That's the harshest sentence that's ever come across.
Right.
That pisses me off.
Yeah. When we're more worried about punishing somebody who hurt somebody's feelings rather than somebody who's
actually killed somebody.
Killed somebody, destroyed families.
Yes.
Like,
it's backwards.
It doesn't make sense.
It really is backwards.
There's something
wrong
there.
And the whole identity politics thing flushes into this, where liberals are all about identity politics and like, oh, I need to be identified as being the person that's light on people. And like, I need, like, Trudeau, who like goes to India dressed like a total fool and makes a fool of Canada by doing the things that's all identity politics. It's saying this and this and, you know, I'm not, you know, abortion's good. And, you know, identity politics needs to be to stop. I wish it wasn't a thing. And I don't understand why it got to this level. But our system is literally so lenient on a multitude of things. Like, I adopted my boys. That whole system is crazy. You could lose 4 or 5 kids through the court. The judge will take them away. But if you have another kid, no, you're reset, restart. Nothing they could do about it.
Yeah.
It's nuts. But that's my airing grievance today is the Canadian. I talk a lot about the Canadian government and how there's a lot of things that are super crazy and backwards here. That's my grievance.
My grievance is snow days. I hate them.
This is like the third one in 2 weeks, man.
Yeah, I don't like them. It just drives me crazy that my kids sit at home and do nothing. And
it's funny because Tyson's teacher sent a thing out today. It's a snow day, but here's a video and here's your class. Enjoy. I was like, yeah.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah. You know, teachers should do that.
I'll tell you what I said to Thatcher today. I said to him, I said, by any chance you got any homework from Monday? Because I went to school Monday.
Yeah.
He goes, I'm not sure. I'm like, okay, hang on a second. I go, I'm not sure. What's I'm not sure mean? Well, maybe I have to color a map. I go, oh. I go, because tomorrow's Thursday and you're going to be going to school. And that was supposed to be done on Tuesday, wasn't it? Like, how come it's not done, right? He's banking on snow days. Yes. Like, that's ridiculous.
And again, we're going to talk about this in a future episode about education, but it doesn't matter if it's late anymore. Did you know that?
It matters in my house.
Well, me too. But doesn't in school, they cannot penalize you for putting in a late assignment.
It's ridiculous.
We'll talk about that another day. It's another grievance to talk about. We're going to get some teachers on. All right, so let's just get to the interview with Jason real quick. A guy that I toured with in the band. He was a really cool guy, and he knows his onions when it comes to infectious diseases and end time things. So let's get right to that interview. All right, so we have a good buddy of mine. We go way back. This guy's name is Jason. And Jason, how do we know each other?
We're in a band for a few years, Hearts and Stereo. I don't know if you still wear that. I try not to wear that on my sleeve.
I have a whole box of t-shirts here at my house still with the Hearts and Stereo, and I use it for like my kids' pajamas and stuff like that. But we played in a band for a couple of years. We did some touring. It was really fun, actually. Jason played bass. He was the hot guy in the band.
Slapping the bass.
Yeah, he was good.
I'll ask Robbie about that.
Yeah. We had a bunch of guys in our band. We had Robbie, we had a bunch of young guys and a bunch of older guys. And Jason and I were like, and Jeremy were like the old guys in the band, and we had some young punks. It was really fun. It was really good. But Jason worked, played bass, and we had a lot of fun. And so as we were doing this zombie apocalypse episode, I'm like, I know somebody who went to school for this type of thing. And so Jason, tell us what it is that you do. How do you, like, what are your credentials?
So I'm an epidemiologist that works in the surveillance of infectious diseases. I've been doing this for about 12 years.
Wow. And so what do you have to go to school? Is that actually a major or a what do you go to school for? Is it called epidemiology?
Yeah, there are degrees in epidemiology. There's definitely been a shift in a lot of health science programs lately where epidemiology is covered more in your undergrad first.
Okay.
Whereas before it was strictly a master's level program. But you can go all the way through to your PhD in epi.
Oh, that's cool.
What does it mean, though?
Yeah, you're probably more familiar with doctors. Doctors cure diseases inside of people. Epis specialize in the patterns of diseases that spread between people. So, for example, a question I try to answer is who is getting sick, when are they getting sick, and where are they getting sick, with what, and why?
Cool. So prediction, well, you can use that information to predict? Is that how that works?
Yeah, we call them interventions. We want to apply interventions that'll limit the spread of diseases between populations.
Such as vaccines?
I know we're talking about
vaccines are an excellent example, and I hear they're a hot topic on your podcast.
We are talking about them a little bit today. We're going to actually do a full podcast of the vaccination debate, but that's not today. Today we're talking about the actual, is there a possibility of a zombie apocalypse? Not in the way of, and maybe it is, but not in the way where people are dead and they're alive, but like, is there in your studies a possibility that there could be a zombie apocalypse?
Well, that's a loaded question. And I think we need to spend a few minutes trying to figure out what we mean by zombie. Did you guys want to throw about some examples about what you're thinking about or what you classify as zombies? Because when you look at pop culture, it goes in a million different directions.
Okay.
Yeah. I think we're smart enough to say that we're not going to be reanimating corpses. So it's not going to be that kind of zombie.
But a human that spreads disease by biting, I guess, or by...
Sort of like a human that would be infected with some sort of disease that would make them animalistic, I guess.
Yeah.
And less human-like, if that makes sense.
Total sense. I was listening to the last podcast you guys did, and for what is a zombie, I did a little bit of thinking of this, and I think the best definition we can go with is a mindless, unthinking being that acts on basal impulse to satisfy a need.
That's what I was thinking.
Drop the mic and walk away.
That's it. Mic drop. That's the best version. That's the thing I've ever heard. Yes.
Yeah. You shouldn't have said you did any research. You said, this is what I think.
Well, okay. So then if that's the
case. Okay. Let me replace the word research with years of drinking and thinking about this.
Nailed it.
So you're saying that, so it does, is that a possibility that that could happen?
Biology as we know it forbids the actual existence of a zombie, but there are some exceptions.
Okay.
So I would classify them six ways, and I don't know if you want to go through all six, but the first one is the most relatable, and it's what I call the garbage zombie.
Okay.
Your magic or science fiction. So Romero zombies with an abstract cause, such an act of God, radiation, cosmic gases, or because there was no more room in hell. These zombies really have no truth in biology, but they're certainly fun to talk about. But the other five, I would say, are plausible.
Give me the most plausible one. The most plausible.
The most plausible one, or my favorite one?
Your favorite.
I want to hear all of them.
Yeah, I do too, but yeah, give me your favorite, and then we'll see what we come up with after that.
You guys know CRISPR?
CRISPR, yeah, I've heard of that. That's this thing that they're using to look at human bodies in some way and cure things, right? That's a sucky description, but
modification.
Okay. Yes. Okay.
Yeah. CRISPR. It's a cheap, reliable, and repeatable method for genetic modification. It uses snippets of genetic material to derive a biological result and can theoretically be applied to just about anything from intellect, stamina, and psychology. Researchers in China have already created super beagles. You know, those cute little dogs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Except these ones have 33% more muscle mass.
Big muscly wiener dog, or no, beagle.
A nation like North Korea would want to genetically enhance their population at large with perhaps dire and unexpected consequences. The scary part is that this technology is really here today. It's not something in the future. You can load up Amazon right now and find cheap CRISPR biohacking kits where all you need is some clean water and a microwave. I watched a guy on YouTube cure his lactose intolerance using a similar method in his garage.
What the heck? How come no more people don't know about this?
Because it's dangerous.
Oh. Man, I'm looking it up.
Yeah, but wait, though. We could get abs like Chris Pratt if we have a microwave and some clean water?
Go with The Rock or something. I like Chris Pratt, and he seems to come up in most of your episodes. But yeah, you can do better than that.
You're saying that with this that already exists, people could genetically modify something to turn them into a zombie or a zombie? We say zombie loosely, but you know what I mean.
I know what you mean. It's difficult. CRISPR zombies haven't hit pop culture yet, but I'd love to see it happen. There would have to be a number of things that happen for a CRISPR zombie to exist, primarily some sort of brain injury or something that takes away reasoning skills.
Okay.
And then fits of rage would also be a good thing. But CRISPR modifications combined with perhaps another infectious agent could be a deadly combination for a new type of pop culture zombie.
Wow.
Wow. That's really cool. So in a scenario where this happens, what does that look like for the world? Let's say that everything aligns perfectly for the perfect storm. How does a CRISPR zombie become an apocalypse?
It's hard to say. It really comes down to zombies out killing humans. So when you have zombies killing humans and humans killing zombies, zombies are just about always going to be better at killing humans than humans are at killing zombies. But there's definitely going to be a critical mass. So I like to say that the battle for the survival of humanity in a zombie apocalypse is going to be short-lived, but the consequences are going to be years long. If it's not contained immediately, not survive.
And would that be done through vaccinations, through killing those who are infected right away, or could, in a likely, or not likely, what's the word I'm looking for? In a feasible zombie apocalypse, is it reversible?
Probably not.
Okay.
So that's there crazy. You go. So the stupid Brad Pitt zombies that's out the window.
They're done.
That
one's.
So the other classes of zombies that I like to think about, you have zombies of parasitic origin, prion origin, fungal origin, and viral origin.
Okay.
You may have heard that pregnant women should avoid cat litter.
Mm-hmm.
That's because there's a parasite called Toxoplasma gondii, commonly found in cat litter. And exposure can cause brain damage to the fetus. But here's the thing. People who have the parasite are 2.5 times more likely to die in a car crash. Maybe this parasite triggers more risk-taking behavior or reduces the sense of danger or self-preservation instinct. Either way, an altered mental state is one step closer to being a zombie, especially if the parasite starts triggering pure aggression.
Wow.
The scary part, about a quarter to a half of the world's population is already infected.
With the cat litter parasite.
It's found in most warm-blooded animals. And so if you're exposing yourself to domestic animals, then you're going to expose yourself to this parasite.
We have 3 cats and a dog, so we're dead. We're basically dead.
So this is a bit of a weak example because we haven't actually seen zombified people due to the parasite, but we're definitely seeing altered behavior.
This is crazy.
This has been known for a while?
Give me another example. Give me the other one, the viral one.
Well, let's go with prion.
Okay.
I don't know what that is.
Okay, but you've heard of mad cow disease?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So you've heard of prions.
Okay.
Okay, prions are like a messed up protein that work their way into the brain, and they cause fatal neurodegenerative diseases.
Oh, so that's not a virus. That's a messed up protein.
Yeah, which is strange. Let me just stop there and just say that's strange.
Okay.
Okay? But it's characterized by a loss of physical coordination, muscle spasms, and increased aggression. So these symptoms in a cow can easily bring reference to a zombie cow. But sure. The question is, can humans be infected as well? And the answer is yes. But I can tell you a story about a tribe in Papua New Guinea.
Mm-hmm.
They would eat their dead as a sign of respect during the mourning process. And this practice was repeatedly introducing a rare prion disease into new susceptible hosts. Symptoms could manifest shortly after, but more commonly, years later. Therefore, you had random members of the tribe losing coordinated physical action, unable to articulate, and becoming very aggressive towards other people. This is a textbook zombie behavior.
Holy smokes.
And that was similar to the way that the mad cow was transmitted too, right? Because they were finding cow protein in the feed. Wasn't that the reason that the mad cow was being transmitted?
Yeah, that sounds familiar.
Yeah.
Okay. So that makes sense. That's a zombie eating the flesh of somebody else and spreading the disease. All right. Very cool. Not cool, but scary, but you know what I mean.
So let's talk about fungus.
Yeah.
There's a fungus called Cordyceps, and it'll infect an ant and completely take over the body. The fungus penetrates the shell and forces the ant to climb to a very specific height, clamp its jaws into a leaf, and raise its body up into the air. At this point, the ant host is killed by the fungus, whereupon it releases spores into the air to repeat the process. A single infected, well-placed ant can destroy an entire colony of millions. The scary thing is that there are thousands of species of Cordyceps fungals, the scary thing is that there are thousands of species of Cordyceps, and each one specializes in infecting just one host. Grasshoppers, moths, bees. This may sound familiar because it's part of the premise in the game The Last of Us.
What's The Last of Us?
It's a video game. It's amazing. A zombie video game. And so the spores are what infect, not biting. Right. So this exists in nature. Yeah. Holy, that's scary.
And the fungus's whole goal is just to spread the fungus further, like for survival of the fungus.
That's correct.
What the heck? That is crazy.
Global warming. Is that cause global warming?
You know, some of the best theories about the Cordyceps fungus, in my opinion, are that it's a form of self-regulating population control. Because the smaller the colony of ant, the less likely it comes into contact with the Cordyceps. But when it just starts to spread like crazy, then it's more likely to come into contact with that species. So it keeps the populations low.
So this is Earth's way of saying there's too many people. We need to, if this ever were to happen, Earth will, because we are organisms on a planet Earth, Earth will say, this is where Black Death or whatever it's called, these diseases came in the past that wiped out millions. It's just, that's just part of who we are.
Yeah, but we figured those ones and we beat them.
Has there been anything like that happen in a human population anywhere in known history?
No.
Okay.
But could you take a quadricep, I don't know what these are called, sorry, and CRISPR and connect these two to create something that would do that? I'm just saying, like, if someone was inherently evil, like, you know, in comics, there's always somebody who wants to see the world burn. Could a CRISPR person take these things and like, genetically modify it so that it would do that to humans?
Not using CRISPR, but the theory's there.
Okay, wow.
So let's imagine a virus that is transmitted from person to person by bites or scratches. It causes stiff muscles, erratic, bizarre behavior, increases aggression, and causes brain injury.
Mm-hmm.
It's called rabies.
Rabies. I was going to say rabies earlier.
There's obviously a vaccination against rabies.
Rabies has treatment, but you have to be vaccinated against it in advance or within a very short duration after exposure.
Rabies can kill you?
Yes.
How fast?
It is 100% fatal in humans.
Wow. So if you get rabies, there's no turning back.
If you don't get treated really, really, really quickly, you're dead. There's one person that survived by being put into a coma and has never been replicated.
And he's a zombie.
Yeah, there's your zombie.
In the typical world of zombies and movies and stuff, they continue to live until their heads get cut off or whatever, they're destroyed. But rabies gets spread and then the host dies.
Well, that's what I like about all of these examples that I've been talking about, is that they actually fit into the dogma of biology that we understand. The circulation is still necessary. Your heart still needs to be beating. You still need to eat. You still need access to water. There are biological requirements to exist, but you're trying to kill other humans. So you've seen 28 Days Later.
Yep.
So that is a modified rabies virus called RAGE.
Mm-hmm.
And it spreads indiscriminately through the population, through bites and scratches.
So in a real world of a zombie apocalypse that were to happen, those who are infected, like let's say this is a real thing, most likely the zombie that gets turned will probably die off within a few days or weeks because it won't be drinking or eating.
It just has to infect more than itself, and it technically spreads.
But it'd be less about people walking around biting others and more about just spreading until the entire population is destroyed.
Essentially. And you think that the boundaries and governments and stuff you can hide behind, but the book World War Z, which is one of my favorite books, it does a great job of explaining how human trafficking is going to play a role in the spread of the zombie apocalypse.
Obviously, because you're in this world of genetics and you understand, because does living in this world and understanding that to your level of understanding, does this not scare the piss out of you sometimes?
No, it doesn't. This is all a theoretical exercise. It's not going to happen.
Okay.
I love talking about it, but it's not going to happen.
So maybe you could tell us realistically, what are you the most scared of? Because, I mean, zombies is one thing. We've talked about zombies. We got all this info, but you must be thinking about like super bugs and stuff like that. That's got to be huge on your radar.
It is. That's specifically what I work on, is antimicrobial resistance.
And right. that's bugs that are learning to overcome vaccinations and medicines and things that are supposed to kill them?
Antibiotics.
Specifically antibiotics and antimicrobials.
And so what does it mean? Like, in the, what does this turn into in a worst-case scenario?
Well, worst-case scenario, we return to a pre-antibiotic era where it's ineffective, and common colds and scratches and small infections that we take for granted these days will kill you.
And is that something that exists now, or is it just like still theoretical?
It exists now.
There's antibiotic resistant bacterias that Where? People live with forever, right?
Pretty sure until my kid brings those home from school all the time.
You can be colonized for a long time and not show any signs or symptoms. You can pass it on to people close to you and they may not show signs and symptoms. But once it gets into the wrong person with the right susceptibilities, that could be game over for them. The migration patterns of birds have a huge effect on influenza, which is one of the most likely end stage apocalyptic infectious disease related scenarios.
Influenza, which is, can you vaccinate against
it? Yeah,
against
seasonal influenza. Flu vaccine every year.
So it brings me to this whole idea of, so if you're saying migrations of birds and all this stuff, in the real end, it's going to be something that's like, it's just nothing we can do about it. We're not biting each other. It's just getting spread and we're just dying. And so as someone who works in this field, what is your take on this anti-vaccination? And without, like, I know we make fun of them, and I do, and I could be majorly ignorant about a lot of this stuff because some of them have really good points. But in your area that you study in, vaccinations, good, bad, you know, where do you stand on that?
They are good. So,
period.
Period.
All right, next segment.
I just want to take a second and say that both pro-vaccine and anti-vaccine parents largely come from the same place.
Mm-hmm.
They want the best for their child. I believe anti-vaxxer parents are truly wrestling with the small probability of getting a deadly disease mm-hmm. and the smaller probability of complications for their precious child derived from the vaccine.
Mm-hmm.
And through fear, ignorance, or conviction, they can't reasonably weigh the already small odds to action.
Mm-hmm. That's true. And so, but in your world, let's say if 3% of people right now are anti-vaccination, which it's, I don't know what the numbers are. You might know more than me, but if this does grow for whatever reason, how much more likely is it that an end time event could occur?
I don't think it's that likely. If people start dying from vaccine preventable diseases en masse, vaccination rates will go through the roof. There won't be any question anymore. It's just we have this error in logic to thinking that we're inherently safe from infectious diseases. Something I like to talk about is you've both probably been to a Remembrance Day ceremony mm-hmm. and seen World War II vets.
Yep.
You've looked into their eyes and you've imagined their experience. But can you tell me that you actually relate to that? No.
Yeah, I couldn't.
You hand them a token gesture. You wear a poppy. You think about the horrors of war. But you don't know what it was like during that time.
Right.
It's true.
You don't know what it's like to hold your child dying covered in pox.
Mm-hmm.
Just Google smallpox in children. Turn mm-hmm. safe search off. And you will just be shocked that this is real life. And yet this was people's realities for almost as long as humans have existed.
And so pox are now basically, for all intents and purposes, gone because of
vaccinations. Smallpox is gone. It's been, I want to get this right, it's not extinct because it still exists in at least two laboratories in the world. I believe one held by Russia and one held by the United States.
Okay.
But it's not circulating in the general population. It's not anywhere to be found in any population.
Could it, though, without the vaccine?
Oh, yeah. If it gets reintroduced, like, I believe that I'm susceptible to smallpox and I would have to get vaccinated against it.
If it goes back to an anti-vaxxer's argument against, and I know we're talking about more about anti-vaxxing and vaccinations, for those who are struggling to convince people to vaccinate their children, what is the, you know, the nice way of saying it?
I don't think there is a nice way of saying it. I don't think there's a way to reason unless you understand the suffering that people have endured for generations at the hands of infectious diseases. If you don't fundamentally understand that, you're not going to have a discussion.
Mm-hmm.
But that not everyone can vaccinate. And so anecdotally, I have a nephew that was born with a congenital heart defect.
Mm-hmm.
And because of that, was not eligible for the early stages of vaccinations.
And so he's more in danger being around people because he can't. And that's what I try to tell people. I say herd immunity works because, you know, 80% of people are vaccinated, which protects the percentage that can't be vaccinated. A lot of people say, yeah, the vulnerable. A lot of people are like, well, if you're so worried about if your kids are vaccinated, what are you worried about? I absolutely hate this argument because it's so stupid. We're not worried about my children. I'm worried about those who cannot be vaccinated. And as a person who loves my community, who, you know, who is a decent human, I want to make sure that those who can't be vaccinated are protected. And parents who don't vaccinate are putting those other kids at risk, but they don't care.
Yeah. And here's the list. You're protecting pregnant women, those allergic to vaccines, those with a history of convulsions, those on immunosuppressant drugs or chemo, immunodeficiency, and those that are too young. And measles is an excellent example of that, because if the mother has been vaccinated against measles, she'll confer immunity to the child for the first 9 months of their life, but they can't actually receive their own measles vaccination until 12 months. So there's a 3-month window in which they're arguably susceptible to the virus.
And measles can kill you.
It can. About a quarter of people will have complications, including diarrhea, ear infection, hearing loss, premature birth, low birth weight, brain damage, and death.
Well, I wasn't going to talk about vaccinations this much, but this is actually really, really, really interesting. I think Jason's the guy who knows this is the definitive guy on this is what he did for his, like, he studies this. He thinks about this all day long. Like, you know, does this, as a person, Jason, I know you. I know you very well. You're a very patient guy. You're very quiet. You know, you've got a good head on your shoulders. You're very smart. What does this stuff, like, not scare you, but does this, like, frustrate you? Like, I know, you know what I mean? Like, without sounding like a wiener, but do these people piss you off?
No, they don't piss me off, Josh. I really recognize that they only want the best for their kids, and they've been educated in less formal ways than I have.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to say, you know, big pharma education outweighs your Facebook university degree.
Right.
But people are searching for knowledge, and they're searching for truth, not just in vaccinations and everything. And they've come to their conclusions, and they've come to their convictions, and they will reap the rewards of those convictions.
Okay. So let's get back to the zombie world. If you see it coming down the pipe, what do you do as someone who understands how this works? What would you do? You get the thing on your phone, says there's an apocalypse. What are your next steps as a person who understands how this stuff works?
Well, the US CDC actually published a preparation guide to a zombie apocalypse. You can go online and read it.
Okay.
It's a tongue-in-cheek way to say that the supplies you need to prolong your life in a zombie apocalypse isn't that different from what you need to survive any natural disaster.
Okay.
We were personally reminded of this just a few months ago when a tornado touched down less than a kilometer away from my home here in Ottawa. We lost power for 3 days.
Wow. Okay.
So I think one of my favorite sayings, maybe it's false, but it's that our society is only 3 missed meals away from total anarchy.
Have you ever thought about this, what you would do? Yeah. Are you a prepper? Would you consider yourself a prepper?
I'm a prepper that hasn't prepped.
Like, I've been on these prepper pages on Facebook just talking to these people about, and there is a huge subset culture of people who prep. They know what they're doing. Some of them prep for 3-4 years. They have bunkers, they have guns, they have food, they have MREs and everything else, and they're all set. Do you think that they have a higher level of survival because they think about this all day?
It's hard to say. Survival is a funny thing. I don't think humans would survive no matter how much you prepare. If it's just you alone in a bunker, self-sufficient, great, you've guaranteed humanity will survive for what, another 40 years?
That's right. That's really harsh.
Congratulations.
That's true though. Wow. That's so
you
true.
Died of natural causes.
You died of being lonely.
Yeah. You died in a bunker, you know, watching Netflix for, wow. So you're right. So you're saying that, is there a possibility, maybe there is, how does the world come back from something that, let's say, a super strain of rabies comes through, kills 80% of the population, they finally get it under control? What's the turnaround to get the world back to where it needs to be? Is it hundreds and hundreds of years? Is it generations and generations?
I don't think it's coming back.
Wow.
I can speak a little bit about this. There's a professor at the University of Ottawa. His name is Robert Smith ?
Okay.
He spells his name with a question mark at the end of his last name to differentiate himself from all the other Robert Smiths in the world, including the singer of The Cure.
Yes.
So his research was on the probability of humanity surviving the zombie apocalypse. And after accounting for a myriad of variables, the likelihood he came to is zero.
Wow.
Containment, quarantine, defense, it only delays the inevitable. The crux of the issue is that humans and zombies cannot live symbiotically. And therefore, humans have to be better at killing zombies than zombies killing humans. And that's not likely to happen. And just off the top of my head, it's been a while since I read the paper, but I don't think that Smith accounted for human-on-human violence, which makes that 0% chance of survival even worse.
What? And we talked about that last week, but why is it that in an apocalypse or any kind of end event or some kind of crazy event where, let's just take a small event like Paris, when there's been 13 weeks now they've been going crazy with this red, yellow vest thing. Let's just take, instead of a disease coming, when something happens crazy, why do people get violent and loot and do that? What the heck is, why?
I think there's a lot of complex reasons for that. If I was to narrow down the most significant, it's because they don't want to watch their child die.
So people will take what they can get, they'll steal, they'll kill because they don't want to be killed. And so, and the inheritance of evil in the world, where we know that this, for, if you call it evil, whatever you want to call it, there are people in the world who, for whatever reason, want to hurt other people. And it could be a genetic thing, it could, whatever you want to call it, I don't care. But you're in a world that, where there's no laws or there's all that stuff, this, the other factor is that you're going to not only have to avoid zombies, but you're also going to have to, like, protect yourself against other people who want to kill you.
Exactly. If my kid, I love my kids, if we're hungry, we've gone 3 days without food, and I realize that my neighbor right next to me has 7 weeks of food stockpiled, I'm going to go there and ask nicely. And when they say no, because they love their kids, I'm going to say, well, no, like, I got to feed my kids and I'm going to take it. If they try to stop me, there could be problems. That's hypothetical, of course. But
no, yeah, but you're exactly, because out of necessity, you're going to have to do what you need to do. That's nature in general.
Primal instinct of survival of you and your and yours.
Yep.
That's crazy.
So really surviving cool. an apocalypse in Canada, though, one interesting facet is I would actually put our survival at 1 year, not indefinite survival, but to survive 1 year in a zombie apocalypse is going to come down to a coin flip.
Just for 1 year. Not, this isn't like you'll survive it forever. It's just to last the year.
Yeah, the general person, I'm going to qualify here, outside of Toronto, Montreal, Vancouver, and maybe Calgary, everyone else in Canada, 50-50 chance for 1 year.
Oh my goodness, because of the population spread.
No, in my opinion, winter is our number one enemy.
Yes.
Yeah, and our survival almost solely relies on living through the 5 to 7 months in which we are forced indoors, unable to rapidly travel long distances.
Would though, the cold be a help or a harm in a disease that is spreading?
Well, in the times in terms of zombies, I think the cold is a help. If we're talking about biological functional zombies, like the six that we were talking about earlier, temperatures below freezing have the capacity to immobilize or destroy the physical body. So we'd be safe.
That's what I thought. So in a colder climate, if you went way up north, like say to a really unpopulated area in the Yellowknife or whatever, is your level or your probability to survive higher?
Against the zombies, higher. Against the elements, lower. If I was to ask, like, which province would I go to try to survive, I would put my money on Prince Edward Island.
Okay.
You got a small population. It's isolated from the mainland with a single bridge.
Yeah.
Limited direct international travel. Self-sustained rural populations with a strong agricultural backbone.
Yes.
You got fishing. You got potatoes. Therefore, you got vodka.
Yes. So you have booze, potatoes, and fish. And the potato and their soil is like made for potatoes, right? So potatoes grow fast and they're hardy, and you could literally can survive on potatoes for the rest of your life. Although I wouldn't, but I mean, you got chips, you got French fries, you got baked potatoes, lots you could do with it.
You were talking on the last podcast too about armor and why more people don't wear it.
Yep.
You just need a couple, like if it's just biting and scratching, like 2 or 3 pairs of jeans. Have you tried to bite through jeans?
That's true, right? Denim is hardcore.
Cuba truly would win a zombie apocalypse.
Why?
Fully self-sustained country in the middle of the Caribbean that doesn't rely on any... Like, they've been embargoed from the States for how many years? They did just fine. They don't need international trade to survive.
That's true.
It's true.
And they have, like, nice...
And mojitos weather. Are delicious.
Aren't That's they sweet. Good?
That's awesome. Jay, I can't believe that, and this knowledge you have in your brain, and we toured for so many years, and I never learned all this from you. It's actually super fascinating.
a chance to like finally voice this somewhere.
Yeah, I love this. I've
been hanging out with friends, humming and hawing on these issues for a long time and playing a few video games, reading a few books and writing a little bit, but never really had a chance to sit down and chat with someone formally.
Or watching the most closely. Maybe you're not scared. I know you said it's not inevitable, but what's the thing or two things that you got an eye on?
So personally, I lean a little bit into the climate change aspect.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not implausible that bacteria or viruses dormant for thousands of years in permafrost is perfectly contagious to humans and deadly.
That we have no idea about. How come no one talks about that in the climate change world? The deniers and the supporters. That's scary.
People do talk about it. I'm here.
That's true.
Jay, just so you know, I'm doing my part on that one. I'm not eating meat because of climate change.
Oh, well. I think, like, climate change or not, we only got how many years on this planet? I'm going to enjoy myself a good ribeye.
Fair enough.
That's one that people are overlooking. They're not even thinking about that.
Well, it's got to be on someone's radar. Don't get me wrong. I think more people are focused on, like, the next super influenza.
Mm-hmm.
We talked a little bit about that earlier.
Yeah.
Influenza, it's birds, it's pigs, and it's humans.
Okay.
And any combination of the influenza and any of those species can, they intermix on a yearly basis and come up with a new version of itself.
Wow.
All right. It's the question we ask every dad that comes on this show. Have you heard it before?
Yeah, I did.
You know it's coming?
I knew it's coming. And I checked with my wife.
Oh, he's already collaborated. Well, if you've already checked with her, you can boost it up then, whatever you want. So over the course of the life of your children, especially their diaper lives, what percentage of dirty diapers did you change?
50%.
50? Nice. I got 50.
Most of the guys that come on this podcast tell us about these high numbers. I got 7%, man.
Yeah, Josh sucks.
I know I'm lazy, but I thought 50% though.
So like, this is where it worked out. Okay, so we had our eldest, our firstborn in Vancouver, and I had really flexible work hours. And so I took 2 months off work just to learn how to be a father and how to be a husband to a mother.
Okay.
And so I did my best to split every single chore with that child. And even when I was working, I was gone for a maximum 8 hours a day. The other 8 hours a day that we weren't sleeping, I took on all the diaper responsibility.
Jason sounds like a dreamboat.
He's pretty hot.
Hottest guy in your band.
He's hot.
Slapping the bass.
Plays music.
Super sensitive.
Yeah.
Looking out for his wife and, oh man.
Well, I appreciate that, Jeff. You sound like a pretty good guy too.
I got 50% too, and that was collaborative by my wife. So we're on the same.
His was just out of an opportunity because he only works 2 days a week. I would like to say
this is what Jason's saying too.
That's true. Jason got to stay. Yeah, that's true. Have you ever considered, like, I'm not going to send my kid to school if I hear that there's 10 or 15 cases of whatever at this? I'm just going to keep my kid home. Are you more aware now that you're a dad? Like, are you more careful?
I wouldn't say I'm more careful on an event by event case like that. I still make my kids skate. I still plan on putting them in hockey. I'll get them to play football if they can. There's lots of reasons not to do these things.
Mm-hmm.
They don't really bother me. What I am particularly interested in right now is that I realize on a deeper level that every single individual is going to face their own apocalypse in their world.
Mm-hmm.
And we have this moment right now to spend the time we have with the ones we love.
Yeah, that's pretty deep.
It's deep.
It's deep, man. So, you know, vaccinate or don't, but overall, Jason's life lesson is, you know, just spend the time with your family. Like, do what's best for your family, but also vaccinate your kids. I'm just saying it. Just, you know, whatever. But Jason, thanks for coming on the podcast, man. This is really interesting. And I'm sure when we have this big debate, which I think we're going to eventually, man, I'd love to get you back on to, like, you know, be on our side.
Sure. Yeah, I'm happy to do it. Thank you for hosting me. It's been a real honor. Jeff, it was nice to meet you.
Yeah, for sure. Next time we come to Ottawa, maybe I'll tag along.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm here. We'll get a drink.
We can go for some beers and Josh can watch.
I can eat steaks. All right, Jason, have a great day, man.
Okay, bye, guys.
Take it easy.
So that was a great interview. I'm really excited. That was really cool. But I'm really sad now because the one main point he had that really stuck with me is that, hey, congratulations, you survived the zombie apocalypse and now you're dead in 40 years.
Yeah, you're going to die
You died alone after 40 and you didn't do nothing you can do.
Yeah.
So there's really no, the scariest is that there's no coming back from apocalypse. You're done.
So team or no team?
I'd say yeah, because I think it's still, I'd like to survive those 40 years with a people that, so it's not so boring.
He basically said a year. We got a year.
We have a year. So let's make the best of the year.
Yeah, exactly. I don't want to die of boredom at the end of that.
Yeah, I mean, let's figure out what we can do. But you know what? Stranger things have happened in the world. A brilliant mind might have survived the apocalypse and has a way to survive. Maybe we'll go to space.
Okay, well.
It's Elon Musk. Elon Musk's on our team. That's who we got to go get. He's got SpaceX.
And Chris Pratt was in a space movie.
Chris Pratt is in the Hot Topics. What's her face? I forget her name. Lesbian girl. Got mad at him for talking about his faith on TV. And Chris Pratt didn't say much. And then people are starting to hate on Chris Pratt because he's a part of a church that is connected to Hillsong, which supports gay conversion therapy, or did at one point.
Holy cow. That's
because he goes to that church, he is now anti-gay, hate everybody. Isn't this how crazy this is getting? So Chris Pratt, if you're listening, we believe you, man. We know that you love everybody. And he came out and said, look, I just love people. I don't, just because I go to a place that had that history doesn't mean I'm that.
That's crazy.
Chris Pratt had this, and he just came up with a perfectly well-balanced statement. Mm. And Chris Pratt was like, hey, I went through a divorce, and the church doesn't believe in that either. And they walked me through this whole process. And so he came up with this statement anyway. Chris Pratt, we love you, man. And we support you all the way. And tell what's-her-face, suck it. All right. That's a short ending, I know, but Jeff's got to go. He's got to pick up his kid and go to a doctor and all that.
I get a bail.
He's doing it. So we will see you next week on the Dad Challenge Podcast, and I don't know what we're talking about yet.
Thanks for listening. Check us out everywhere.
The Dad Challenge Podcast.
Dad Challenge Podcast.
And we will see you next week. Peace.
See ya. Never stop dreaming.